You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Balcones' first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
On social media the last few weeks, I've been talking about biltong. Beef jerky, as we know, is like dehydrated and, you know, like really dried version, chewy. Biltong's actually from South Africa. They do like a dry-aged version of jerky, but they hate it when you call it jerky. I'm a huge fan of Strive. I reached out to them. It's great when you're drinking whiskey. It's very salty, savory beef. It's, you know, it's perfect. So they sent me some Strive Biltong. I will say this. Check it out. If you're going to order from them, order the slabs. So the slabs are a solid hunk of beef, and you get you can slice it into strips, and it's fresh, dry-aged beef, and it's fantastic with whiskey. So definitely check it out. Strive Biltong. Just Google it, Strive. And if you use the code PEAT15, as in Whiskey PEAT15, they'll give you a consistent, not just your first order, but a consistent 15% off all your orders. Definitely check out Strive Biltong. They are not paying me. I'm just a huge, huge fan of their Biltong. We did get a copy for Waterford. Irish whiskey. I'm a fan. Or the copy is coming. I talked to Bill yesterday. I am a huge Irish whiskey fan. I'm a huge Waterford fan. I don't know that it's actually here yet in Texas, but it's coming. Irish whiskey, 100 proof, the whole argument over whether or not terroir exists in whiskey is thrown out the window and backed. All of this is all single farm, single origin, Irish whiskey, grain to glass, beautiful representations of what Ireland can do. Check it out, Waterford whiskey. I'll get a copy. I'll read it eventually. We'll get there. I just want to say I love it. And they are sponsors of the show. This week, I talk with Sean and Dan from the Bourbon Junkies. For those of you who do know, there is a fantastic channel on YouTube called the Bourbon Junkies. Two lifelong friends started a bourbon channel just 2 years ago, and it has exploded. They are massively fun to talk to, massively fun to drink with. And today, I shoot the shit with two future... God, they're going to be huge. I mean, they're already huge, but they're legitimately, in the last 2 months, they've doubled their subscribers on YouTube. They're sitting at around 40,000 subscribers. They're blowing up. Couldn't be a bigger fan. So this week, we sit down with these two guys. So without further ado, please welcome Dan and Sean from the Bourbon Junkies. Cheers. Dan, Sean, what's up, buddies?
What's going on, man?
Thanks for doing this. I've been kind of, it's funny. So I work a lot from home, and I'll have two screens up, and inevitably I get the notification that you guys are live, and I gotta change what I'm doing. I gotta pull you up and chime in. So,
well, we appreciate you jumping in.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I've been a fan for a little bit. It's so interesting to see y'all's, especially when I looked back into you guys a little further, you know, long before
right
I found you guys, And your channel had this very, very humble beginning.
Very.
Oh, the humblest.
The humble is the nicest word you possibly could have used for our early content.
Production value was at an all-time like $100 back then. So
Yeah, well, I went back and I looked, and at 8 months ago, you guys hit 5,000 subs on YouTube. It took 6 months later, which was just 2 months ago, you guys hit 20,000 subs. And just a couple days ago, you guys crossed the 40,000 sub mark, which as far as I know, besides the Whiskey Tribe, I think you guys are the largest YouTube channel.
It's Bourbon Night is at like 62K or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so it's interesting because Sean and I like look at those analytics because it's so easy to forget when we're putting out content, doing live streams and busy doing merch launches and stuff like that. We get busy doing that stuff and then realize, oh, cool, like we hit 40K subs. And then we realize like in January, we're like, holy shit, we're only at 3,000.
Yeah.
Like that feels like that was 14 years ago.
It took us a year and a half to get to 2,000 subs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I went up to I'd say probably about a month ago now, I went up to talk to Daniel Whittington. We went and had cigars over at the, you know, in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
and we were talking about Fred Minnick making the change to do more on YouTube. And early on, because the Facebook bourbon world is so big the way that it is, we were uploading to YouTube and uploading to Facebook and cannibalizing our numbers. So all of our numbers, all of our views were coming from Facebook and nothing on YouTube. And then finally, I think it was this year, we interviewed Sam Hewen from Outlander, and that had such a cannibalization. Like I think we saw like 150,000 views on Facebook and another 150 on YouTube.
That's awesome.
Wow. And what, no ad revenue, right? Like because or half the ad revenue. So, I've been doing this 2 years and have been making a lot of rookie mistakes, just not knowing any better. So I talked to Daniel and he said that Fred had come to him a lot trying to figure out how to do more on YouTube. And I just watch your videos and I see what you guys are doing and I couldn't be more happy.
I think the thing about Facebook is the reason that YouTube's, I'm going to say difficult. And the reason that YouTube's difficult is because people have to know where you're at to find you unless YouTube likes you enough to throw you in an algorithm.
Yeah.
Right. So on Facebook, there are communities and the private Facebook groups, especially in the whiskey universe and like the media universe. It's so easy to stumble on things on Facebook. Right?
Oh, yeah.
On YouTube, if you want to find us and YouTube doesn't show us to you in an algorithm, you have to literally search for us. Mm-hmm. We have to get lucky that you searched a bottle we reviewed.
You have to like our thumbnail to click on it, right? The title.
Facebook's
you have to be searching.
So much less intentional.
Yeah.
YouTube's so intentional to find a piece of content. So
Facebook's about throwing ads for everything in your face. So, yeah. I mean, very easy to find, you know, one bourbon group to another, just typing bourbon in a search bar, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and I checked out you guys are doing Patreon as well. I mean, you guys have when did this take off for you? When did you really start realizing, or let me ask this. When did you really start dreaming that maybe you could quit your day job and do this full time?
A week ago.
I don't know. I think the idea, like
6 months, maybe. That,
I don't know. I would say maybe earlier this year.
I'm
sure we talked about it last year.
I would guess around April. Honestly, because we were about a month into working from home and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we could do a little bit more stuff for the channel and we were doing more merch stuff and there's just different revenues coming in. And we were like, you know, we might be able to do this.
Yeah.
So
someday,
not quite there, but
we have stuff we want first, which is the issue. Everything costs so much money. And so we have stuff that we want and we need for the channel that we've kind of placed basically before the idea of doing it full time at this point. So.
That's exactly how you should do it. Get everything. We're in an equipment buying mode. I mean, we've been using a Studio Blackmagic camera for quite some time.
Okay.
But part of my goal is to have conversations with actually interesting people. I mean, you and I, Dan, we both share a love for comedy.
Right.
Brendan Schaub and the crew from T-Fat K,
Yeah.
So one of the things we wanted to do is to be able to do the show on the road, but you can't just cut it with a webcam and a,
Yeah, of course.
You gotta have good equipment. So that's exactly what you guys should be doing, is as much buying as possible for your equipment before deciding to just relax.
Yeah, it's been a lot of preloading for stuff like that, just so that we have the all the equipment and space is our new big battle.
Yep.
We can talk about the hut as it's referred to. We moved out into this one and we thought we had all the space in the world, and then everything kind of kept growing, and now we've got all the growing pains of fitting everything in this tiny little space.
Yeah. We moved to the hut, like, so the channels will be 3 years old in May. Mm-hmm. And so we moved from where, like, the terrible pole barn with like 13 foot ceilings and the worst audio lighting situation ever. We moved from over there to this building, which they're both on my property. We moved to this building last year and thought, like, it's about 300 square feet. And it was like, but it'll be a dedicated 300 square feet, which should be great. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, like, probably by like February or March this year, we're like, how do we get more square feet? Mm-hmm. So now that's one of the things that we're working on doing before we do, you know, consider quitting our jobs, is build a new building, and a big building that's purpose built with sets in it, in a hangout area and brainstorming area, podcast area, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So
are you guys going to be doing the podcast thing? Cause as far as I know, you guys are just on YouTube, right?
Correct. And so one of the things actually this year before the pandemic came, one of the things I was trying to do was actually branch us out into a different platform. So I was talking with a couple different podcasts that are in the whiskey world. And we were going to do a podcast with them this year and try to do like a little tour so we could be on a bunch of different podcasts over like maybe a month or so, that would hopefully help with exposure and help get us to a different platform, stuff like that. So when Sean and I right now, a big thing that we're having an issue with is time.
Yeah.
And so when we have more time, one of the ideas was we would do, it won't be completely bourbon related. It'll be bourbon related to an extent.
Yeah.
But it'll be kind of like the end of our live streams, which is just kind of us like sitting around bullshit talking, stuff like that.
Yeah. Whatever we saw on YouTube in a video or something, we'll talk about that or something and just kind of sit back and relax and have a good time. But that was, I think we've talked about, when we get more time of, you know, doing this full time, we can come here, shoot some episodes and have some fun with that. But yeah, there are definitely people that we want to teach us in those ways before we go apart into the podcast world. Cause that's pretty foreign to us as a space, I guess.
Well, the biggest thing, and you know, I don't know who all you spoke to, I'm sure Dad's Drinking Bourbon or Bourbon Pursuit or those guys. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is consistency, is always releasing no matter what. And that's the biggest thing, you know, same time, same day, same everything. And I knew that going into it. And even then there's times of the year where I just don't have time. And I hated it. But earlier this year, right after our whiskey festival, I took like 3 weeks off. I just didn't have the time to come in studio. I live about an hour from here. So,
oh, wow.
It's a doozy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's what we did. I talked to Dad's Drinking Bourbon. I talked to John like before that, right? Mm-hmm. And so John was one of the people that I was talking about. We were going to go on and podcast with them. And they're great to talk to and to chat with. But one of the things that we do with the YouTube channel is the same idea, is our Monday and Thursday videos come out every Monday, Thursday at 11:30.
Yep.
And we've missed like that time.
Twice.
But we've never missed a Monday, Thursday release since the channel started almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So the consistency thing, that was something that we made important at the beginning of the YouTube channel too, because like what we were talking about a little bit ago, the discovery and trying to get people to find you. And then like our live streams are always on Tuesday nights at 9, because if people can get into a habit of watching our content at a certain time, they're more likely to watch it.
Yeah.
It's got to work that way. Right. Mm-hmm. So just like a podcast. So.
Yeah, or any other TV show, right?
Right.
We all remember watching Simpsons on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Going up. So there's pieces that may be pretty common that a lot of people understand about you guys that I don't know. So how did you guys grow up together? You know, how old are you guys? Give me the backstory here.
Sean's 21, barely of legal drinking age. No,
Dan's about 54 then. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's everybody calls me old because I'm gray hair. Uh-huh. Sean's got the frame of a child. So that's how this whole thing works.
Yep.
Basically, we went to like kindergarten, preschool.
Yeah.
We went some baby school together.
Played like Little League and stuff. But I mean, that's not things you really remember.
Yeah. And then then we came back together in high school. We were mm-hmm. friends in high school, lived together in college. And now we're both 31 and we're both here. So,
yeah.
Well, that's great. I mean, you guys have obviously, there's a rapport that you guys have that I think does well. I watched you guys on the episode of Cigar Dojo.
Oh, yeah.
And loved every minute of it. Obviously, those guys, Eric, I told him right after I watched it, Eric likes to downplay his bourbon knowledge as like, oh, I'm a cigar guy. But then they pull out Thomas Handy and George T. Stagg and William LaRue Weller and all these bottles.
Yeah. We were I'm set
like,
up.
Yeah. Right,
clearly they're guys, you know, they like to play dumb. Like, oh, I don't know what this is. Is this good? You know,
I wish we were like looking back at it. I should have known from his like smirk when he was like, all right, let's go through a couple of his bottles.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
I wish everybody – the best part about that whole thing is when we were in like the – because they do theirs live, right? And mm-hmm. so we got in a little early, and he was explaining like how the show was going to go and whatnot. And he goes, yeah, so we're actually going to go through his closet whiskey collection. And he laughed like, you guys are going to make fun of it because it's not good.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Initially. He set you up fully.
Yeah. And then we get there, and he's like, is this good? And it's like a green bottle Pappy or something like that. And it was like, is this good? It's
I've never seen one of those in my life.
Dude,
I guess.
Don't know, man. I'm sure it's great whiskey. I've never had it.
So. he pulled out, I was doing some math at one point. He pulled out like valuation wise, like $4,000 in whiskey. And you're like, I don't know. Is this any good?
Yeah. He's pulling out like old E.H. Taylors that you can't touch unless you have secondary money.
Here's my Blanton's. They're like, okay. Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. Do you guys like Jack Daniel's Old Number 7 or how do you feel about that?
I honestly don't even remember where I found you guys or how I stumbled upon you guys. I've been in the Bourbon Junkies group for quite some time. And I want to say it was maybe like 3 months ago. I just decided you guys were definitely in the 20 plus thousand subscriber zone. So about 3 months ago. And then that one night I just jumped in and you were wearing Brendan Schaub shirt, a thick boy club.
Shirt. Thick boy bike.
Yeah.
And I got overly excited because the bourbon world, it's difficult. So I don't know how active you guys have been in Facebook, but about 2 years ago, you guys, I'm sure knew about it because you're Whiskey Tribe fans. So a lot of your early videos, you guys actually made a trip to Texas. Yeah.
Yep.
So, the Whiskey Tribe guys offer a whiskey certification, a whiskey psalm certification. Yep. And it's something like $5,000. It's a bit pricey
a little high.
Very affordable, some would call it.
Yeah. So, but it's like a 5-day course. You go, they put you up in lodging, they feed you the whole 9 yards.
Okay.
And the bourbon world, the bourbon Facebook world had a complete fucking meltdown.
Yeah. Yep.
Super pissed off at them saying that it was a ripoff. And I had a point to this. What was I going with this?
Early Facebook days. I think it was finding us or something like that.
Yeah. So I remember where I was going with this. So everyone lives in an echo chamber. The Facebook bourbon world is obsessively within their own bubble.
Yes.
Whiskey Tribe guys have cornered the market on YouTube for some time.
Yep. Yeah.
And my love and passion for comedy podcasts has always been so outside my bourbon hobby.
Right.
I mean, I always say I admin one of the largest, actually the largest single market whiskey group in North America, the Houston Bourbon Society. And almost zero of those people listen to T-Fat K or Your Mom's House or Joe Rogan or any number of these things. So when I found your channel and I saw you wearing a Brendan Schaub shirt, I had a complete meltdown. I was so excited. And then I overtook your comments. And then I felt bad. I was like, I'll send him a message saying that I just got excited. I just got, you know, I got all giddy about it.
Right. Well, the funny thing is, first off, shout out Thick Boy Bike Club. Anyways,
make Tuesday nights great.
I'm telling, like, I've been listening to Fire and the Kid, I think, for about 3 years. And then obviously like Tom and Bert, like that whole group of people, like, mm-hmm. right. It's like Rogan and Schaub and all those people. Right.
So Two Bears, One Cave, man. Absolutely. Right,
Two Bears, One Cave is probably one of the greatest podcasts like being done right now in the comedy world. But it's funny because I started listening to them and then I bought a bike like a year ago mm-hmm. and I never rode it. And then Schaub started Thick Boy Bike Club. And I'm like, dude, this fits my lifestyle.
He gets me
way too well. So then I'm like, I told Ricky, I'm like, my wife, I was like, I'm waiting for this launch right now. I just want a shirt. And then I got that shirt and I got another bike. And now Sean got a bike. Mm-hmm. And now like we have like 3 or 4 other people that like we go mountain biking from time to time and stuff like that. But it does one of those things in my head that this doesn't cross over to comedy in that way. But I think personally that whiskey was such a serious topic, right? Like if you're talking, like you just said, everybody's so upset about the Whiskey Tribe or the Whiskey yeah. Vault's marketing school of yeah. Psalm stuff,
calling themselves Psalms.
Right. And how whiskey. Much it costs and whatever. Yeah. But one of the things, I don't care what anybody says, they're the best at marketing.
Oh yeah.
Period. When it comes to yeah,
like, in the whiskey game,
in the whiskey tube and whatnot. But anyways, I think that everybody takes whiskey so seriously. And when we started the channel, it was like, let's not, right? Like, let's enjoy it how we enjoy it, which is like, we give each other a hard time. Mm-hmm. We sit here and bullshit, that kind of stuff. But one of the things that I think is changing personally, I 100% believe whiskey is getting less serious. The people getting into whiskey who weren't into whiskey, which seems to be a lot of our crowd.
Yeah.
Are people who were like, who like the channel and like the type of content because it's not snobbery. Yeah. It's not constantly like pinkies up. Like you can't have fun.
It's just two dudes hanging out drinking whiskey.
Yeah. You can enjoy whiskey. You can still have a good time. You can mm-hmm. even pick it apart and have a good time. It's not,
absolutely.
It's not like this super dry thing where the dry thing in my head doesn't cross with humor well, right? Or that type of comedy.
Yeah.
So with it moving to, in my opinion, with it moving to a space in which people want to have more fun with it and take it a little less seriously, I think comedy crosses over better now. I think it will continue to cross over better personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom and Bert are my great white buffaloes. I mean, yeah. If I can get, there was a couple years ago, the very first time I got to sit down with someone remotely famous, was Tom. He was in town. I didn't get him on the show because he was only here for one night.
Okay.
But he invited me to come to a whiskey tasting after the show.
Oh, and that's very cool.
And well, this isn't a braggart moment. This is a embarrassment moment because I am, I am 95% sure that I screwed the pooch on that one and embarrassed myself because I can't even put it up to one thing or one thing I said, but I go back and I've every time Tom or Bert come into Houston, I always reach out to their manager, their publicist. Right. Like, I'd love to have you. Bert, his whole shtick is drinking and
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. He just did the Dominatrix thing with a bottle of Buffalo Trace. I'm like, dude, I've got the only radio show in Texas covering spirits. Like, come on.
Right.
And every time it's like, oh, we're not going to have time or, oh, we can't make it or every freaking time. And then I go back and I look at the photos from that night of hanging out with Tom and Tom does not look like he's having a good time. I look back and I like, it boils, you know, it's like when you go on a date with a girl and you wonder if that thing you said or the thing you wore looked, went over well. And Brandon comes on.
Been analyzing this for that many years, which makes it
how
even
well
better.
How long did that joke land? Yeah. Not well? Okay.
2 years. 2 years it's been eating away at me. And every time I get a no, I'm like, oh, it's because I screwed up. And I talk to Brendan quite often. I know it's fascinating. Brendan gets so much shit. Like he has the most devout following of people who hate him.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, we've talked about this,
100%.
And honestly, and I mean this with – I don't even know that this could be taken objectively. He could not be a nicer guy.
Right.
And I talked to him about this whole Callan thing. I know we talked to you, you kind of mentioned it on your show. And it wasn't Brendan's decision to not do it with Brian anymore. Yeah. Brian stepped away because the company that handles their advertisers flat out said that, which is Katz Media or Katz Media said, you know, there's no way these advertisers are going to stick around if Brian stays. So Brian left on his own. Like it wasn't, but Brendan, if you follow them on Reddit
it's the worst. It's literally the worst.
If you just,
you're already starting off on the wrong foot. So
if you just go to my YouTube channel, the video I did with Brendan, it has more downvotes than anything I've ever done. And it's because in the comments are just them tearing, and we had to clean it up. We probably deleted 90% of the comments, and it's also.
Oh, that's the edited version. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's such a weird thing because, like you said, he has the most devout following of people who want him to not succeed for some reason. And I don't know if it's because he transitioned from being an athlete, a fighter, to a comedian. And because of the platform that him and Brian had created, and then they were doing live shows, and he was going and doing stand-up at those live shows at the very beginning. And then when he jumped into comedy, I think it seemed from an outside perspective, like, how the hell did this guy get here already? That's not fair.
You shouldn't be a headliner when this is your fourth show.
But I don't get it, man. Cause if you go after, and I know people were mad that Callan stepped away, and it was a weird thing how it happened. Cause Callan said he wasn't going to be quiet and he wasn't going to step down. And then obviously he ended up stepping down and backing off, whatever. And then Josh Wolf carried that second, the co-host. If you go to everyone, and I love Josh Wolf to death. Like, he's hilarious. I think he seems like a great dude. If you go to those YouTube videos, they have the most dislikes. They're 6,000 dislikes, 1,000 likes on those videos.
Good ratio.
And it's like, why are 400,000 people watching it then?
Yeah.
It's
crazy, man. I love Josh Wolf as well, but I told Brandon, I was like, I think Chappelle and Malik make a better team.
Dude, Chappelle and Malik, they could rebrand that podcast at this point, and that could be its own thing.
And that's what it's going to be. I mean, I think Wolf's a great comedian.
Right.
He didn't feel the same.
No. And, well, they don't have the same
dynamic.
Chappelle and Malik, they seem like they've known Brendan and they've known each other forever.
Yeah.
And they bring an energy to the show that, like, Josh Wolf seems like a really calm, chill dude.
Yeah.
And Chappelle and Malik with Shab, that's the opposite of calm and chill, and it's fantastic.
You get
it's
some perfect. Whitewater Rapids in
that
flow.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I've been a huge fan. They were just in Dallas a couple weeks ago, and I sent a bottle for each of them and some edibles up there for – it turns out Chappelle doesn't drink, and I missed that part. I'm a fan of Brendan, not because he's been on the show or I'm kind of there's been some the word cuck has been used a few times on the video I did with him. But I he could not be a nicer guy. And in private, off camera, I'm just a fan of the guy. Brendan couldn't be a nicer guy. And I've the first episode he did on my show, I felt I got sucked into his comments. I felt the need to defend him. And Chappelle or Malik recently talked about that. Like, two episodes ago, Malik was talking about how he got offended for Brendan in the comment section, and Malik found himself getting sucked in. And I was like, did you just, you got to ignore it. You got to move on.
It's interesting because the way that Shab handles social media, and I don't know if this is the effect, I don't know if this is the chicken before the egg or right, but the Shab handles social media, in all of the stuff that he does, he says, don't read the comments, stay away from social media. He doesn't even run his own Instagram, obviously, for the most part. And he's like, I don't read YouTube comments. I don't read Instagram post comments. I don't do that. I stay away from all of it. And he told Callan to do the same thing when Callan was going through that shit, right? But so how we handle it, and he's wildly successful.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine he's wrong about everything, right? But how we handle it is, now we're in a much smaller, much more niche community by about 1,000,000,000%. So obviously that's taken with 4 pounds of salt. But
man, are the hate comments so much more targeted.
Right. But how we handle it is, we try to talk to everybody. We try to read all the comments. We try to respond to all the Instagram DMs and all the 100%. Patreon messages. But we have a really tight-knit community. And I don't know if that's because of the responding and the hate that surrounds his YouTube comment section for some reason is based around him ignoring it.
Yeah.
But I've not seen a more toxic YouTube place where, for the most part, their podcast isn't a toxic environment.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And it's not, it's really just guys hanging out and shooting the shit.
Yeah.
I never understood it. Let's go back to what you just said though. Do you guys get a lot of hate? Cause I've never really jumped through your comments, but it seems like you guys have a lot of support.
We don't get a lot.
Not a lot, but some of it. I mean, some of them, like, I'll send to Dan and be like, you see this? He'd be like, oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, we've only deleted a couple.
What's the worst thing you said?
They aren't super creative, which is the bummer. Like, usually they're like, you guys aren't old enough to drink whiskey. And it's like, shut the fuck up, boomer. You know what I mean? And
that's a lot of the hate. If we look too young, it's like, I'm not taking any whiskey advice from someone that just graduated high school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't then.
Thanks for helping the algorithm.
Yeah.
That's the same guy posting memes about the government and Trump and some 45-year-old. It feels like his rights are being taken away.
1,000% mm-hmm. accurate. We actually had, I think the most interesting, I'm going to call it hate. You can use a different word.
Okay, which one?
The most interesting thing we've had happen was, which made me feel the most famous we'll ever feel probably.
Oh, okay.
Was somebody DM'd my wife on Instagram and was like, I hooked up with Dan in Ann Arbor 2 years ago. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
And then my wife, I told, and she was like in a hotel in Ann Arbor. We're what, 2 hours from Ann Arbor?
Yeah.
And I told Ricky, I was like, I've never stayed in a hotel in Ann Arbor in my lifetime.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is my wife walks out and I'm working out here because I'm working remote and she walks out to the shed and she just hands me her phone and I just died laughing and she's like, what? And I go, this means I'm famous.
You're trying to get canceled.
Nobody tries to cancel somebody who's not famous, man.
It's not good for your ego.
So then we tracked it down with some of our Facebook group mods. We tracked it down to a old guy with a beard.
Yeah.
Like a real old guy with a beard. And Ricky messaged him back and she's like, I don't think he likes beards, so I don't know that he's going to be into you. And then they just stopped responding. And I'm like, well, you know, but that's probably the most hateful thing that, like, targeted hateful thing that's ever
You're
happened.
You're trying to ruin someone's marriage. Yeah. That's pretty rough.
Unfortunately.
Like, that's wildly different than just being like, that guy's fat and that guy's little. Okay. Thank you.
Which that happened.
Yeah.
But that's become a joke. So it's acceptable now.
So if you had to attribute both of you a role in the original T-Fat K, what does that mean? That Dan's Brendan and Sean is Rinks?
Yeah, like, for sure.
Is Dan,
I'm Batman,
the more
Sean's Robin type thing? Who's like a worse sidekick than Robin? I'm Batman. Sean's like Alfred's kid.
Darkwing Duck. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's one of the greatest shows of all time.
So Sean's universally loved. Dan's the more controversial figure.
So the joke,
goes back and forth.
There's another YouTube channel, ADHD Whiskey, Matt Porter is his name.
Yep.
And he started,
amazing fella.
He started this thing when we had about 1.5 subs.
Yeah.
He started the Fire Sean train.
Yep.
Hashtag Fire Sean, which came out of nowhere for no apparent reason, as far as I could tell.
It stuck.
And it stuck. And so like hashtag Fire Sean became a joke.
Oh yeah.
But in like a loving way, obviously. And so,
like, he just told me he loves me the other night. It's on YouTube. He can't take it away. So
it's a public video and it's on our channel. He can't delete it. But so it does go back and forth. Like, we get nights. Sean came in hot the other night because Sean couldn't drink because he was on antibiotics.
Oh, yeah.
And so Sean came to a live stream where I had to do Whiskey Wars and Sean couldn't drink anything but like coffee and water.
No, I just got to sit here and watch him spin off.
It took me about 2 hours to do this Whiskey War thing where we blind four whiskeys and then rank them, place them, or whatever. And so
couldn't you taste it? Just spit it out?
No. So I was even told to like stay away from hand sanitizer too, because it can absorb through your skin. So if I put alcohol in my mouth, there was a chance it would absorb into my bloodstream that way and make me very, very sick.
Okay.
The antibiotic Sean was on, and this isn't what it was for.
Yeah. It's the same class of drug that they give recovering alcoholics that won't stop drinking. So you just has a terrible reaction to alcohol and it'll just make you violently sick.
Okay.
You only had to take it for about 2 weeks. So it was like, you know what? Or 1 week.
1 week.
It?
Yeah.
So
I can take a week off.
Take 1 week off. So Sean had to sit through it that night. That was the night where like, it was basically team Sean then nobody team Dan that night. So it does fluctuate back and forth, but I wouldn't say we get a lot of hate. No. It's just such a smaller community.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I'm sure that you feel the same way. Like you said, you felt the need to defend him in the comments for a little while, right? It feels the same way where you can, if we have 300, 400 comments on a video, 280 of those 300 comments could be hyper positive, very nice, like just great comments. And then there could be 5 of the 300 that were rude or even like just you come across like a dick.
Yeah.
In those 5, you're like, are you kidding me? That guy? I'd like, just that's how
you
it works.
See this?
That's the problem with, that is the problem with reading it. But unfortunately, that's our community. So to not read 280 nice comments.
To not see the five bad ones.
To not communicate with those people because of five dickheads. Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? But
yeah. Don't get me wrong. Just sometimes they can be very creatively hurtful. like that interview I did with Anthony Starr from The Boys.
Oh yeah,
I just finished that. It's fantastic.
Thank you. I wondered. So what we did is it was a very bizarre setup. So we flew to LA. We brought a bunch of equipment. We got set up at the Petit Hermitage and we filmed in our hotel room. And so of course, Anthony Starr's publicist is like, go to this hotel, knock on this door. And the hotel we stayed at turned out to be a sex hotel.
Oh God.
So we found
accidentally.
Out. Yeah. Well, we found out that it's a getaway within Los Angeles. Like people go, you go with your mistress or you go with your girlfriend or you go with your, and we didn't know any of this.
You didn't get that when you rented it for 8 hours?
Yeah. No, we stayed the whole week and we were there for 3 days.
Okay.
But we had a damn good time.
Mm-hmm.
They have this gorgeous roof overlooking LA, like with a pool and all. And we go up there and it's just me and my producer, Jack, just two guys. And all of the seating in the pool area are beds. There's no couches, there's no chairs, it's all beds.
So you got a bed.
A lot of implications.
You go up there poolside and you can lay in a bed with whomever you like to lay in a bed with. And
here we are.
And then there's no filming allowed up there either because it's topless. It's one of the only topless. So we didn't know any of this. And then of course I answer the door and Anthony Starr is like, I'm here for an interview. So after we finished banging, we went ahead and filmed. Yeah, no, but it was a fun interview.
He's a good looking dude. I don't blame you.
The comments were rough though, man. I got tons of like brutal, because I wear a lot of plaid and I've got the red beard and I've got the glasses. So hipster gets thrown out a lot.
Sure.
Very lumberjacky.
Yeah. I get a little lumberjacky and I got this one guy said something along the lines of like, why do all new millennials look the same?
Oh my God.
And he's like balding or bad hair due to bad genetics, eyeglasses due to bad eyesight, due to bad genetics, a pubic hair beard due to bad genetics. I was like, hold on. Like you got me on the first two, but this is a good beard.
This is luscious.
this is a beautiful beard, you dickhead.
Yeah. How dare you?
But it's
that guy was also 85 and lonely. It makes you feel better.
It's really good when you comment back to those people about like, they'll re-comment on their own thing, be like, oh, I meant this. And it was like, you know, you can edit on YouTube comments, but you're so old, you don't know that. Okay.
Those people, I got to think about it like this. I've never went to somebody's YouTube video and then not liked what I watched. Mm-hmm. Like I've done that part.
Enough to comment.
I've never done it to the point in which I was like, dust off the old keyboard. Here we go. And then it was like, you guys suck. This is a terrible video. Yeah. How little do you have going on that somehow that feels fulfilling? Like you got to find friends or a hobby or something. That's such an unfulfilling, anger filled hate. Like I don't understand that. That seems so insane to me.
Well, the thing that I get the opposite of that. Like I said, I saw you wearing the Thick Boy Bike Club shirt and I felt this inspiration to interact with you. I was like, oh shit, another comic fan.
Right.
And but never the opposite. I've never watched something and been like, I'm outraged and I feel the need to comment and be shitty about it, you know?
Yeah. We've gotten like comments in the past where somebody was like, you should do your videos this way. And it was like, then you go start a channel.
Yeah.
Because we'll do whatever the hell we want here. Yeah. We made this.
Because someone was like, I guess just turn on a camera, get drunk, and say things or buzzwords about whiskey. I was like, if only it was that easy to do YouTube. Yeah,
no editing goes into this. Well, you should watch our old videos. They're the exact same.
Yeah.
In the same spot with no extra work done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, man. I don't know. Some people like to be hateful, I guess.
So to pivot here, I sent you guys, or I had Caroline sent you guys a sample.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get a chance to try it?
It is in the glasses.
I was gonna say
we both just
poured it.
Okay. I'm gonna do the same. I had to go pick up a little sample myself.
While you do that, I like that, and I don't think anybody got to see it, but you just pulled like five bottles of whiskey out of that black bag next to you and it was awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We started, I'm almost ready as he pulls out bottle after bottle.
Is it Four Roses and a Michter's Rye?
No, it's a Bourbon Supreme, an old 70s Bourbon Supreme Dusty.
Oh, and, I just saw like the green neck tag there.
Yeah, and then I've got a little Old Crow Travelers. Those are great.
Nice. Oh, dang.
But yeah, those bottle limos. So part of what I do is in the hobbyist world. Obviously, I'm like you guys. I go to bottle shares. I share bottles. The other side is I kind of work in the industry. I have my own brand. I'm bottling my own products. I have a whiskey festival. I have all these other things going on. And these bags, these bottle limos, I'm telling you, go to Amazon, type in bottle limo. They're meant for wine bottles, but liquor reps, they've got wheels on the bottom. You just travel it around like luggage. So you go over to a friend's house, you take 12 bottles with you, and you don't have to carry around in a box. You've got a little bottle limo. So
that's awesome.
These things are great, man.
That's a super good idea.
Man.
So did you guys get to try it before, or is this your first try?
I
tried it yesterday when I got here. And the way that I tried it was definitely not out of the bottle.
It's definitely not out of the bottle.
Definitely not out of the bottle.
Yeah.
Like your Mizanura Oak Angel's Envy.
Oh, man.
Have you had that?
No, I refuse. Yeah.
Thank God. You know what? We should have refused. I sat on that stupid website. Now, I know I work in IT. I get the technical issue thing. Yeah. I know it happens and whatever. Apparently, they weren't prepared. They didn't stress test enough. Anyways, I sat on that stupid website for almost 2 hours to get that bottle. And then we paid $350 plus tax for it. And then we drank it. And then it was still terrible. Like, you figure at some point that experience would have gotten better.
You know.
Dude.
Got a cool crystal decanter eventually.
That part is... I will say Angels did a very good job, or love whoever made the crystal decanter is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah, so the whiskey's not good, huh?
Dude, it tastes like weird Dickel.
Yeah. I really thought like Klein was pulling a fast one on us at first. I was like, this tastes like Dickel.
Klein picked it up for us because he was in Kentucky. That's at the beginning of our that Angels Miserinata Bob cask, whatever it's called. That bottle was opened by Klein.
What was that?
I can't pronounce that language or whatever, dude.
Miz Nara.
We have an expert here. I can lean on him right now. Like that.
I am not an expert any more than you guys are an expert. I just drink a lot.
Well, okay. If you drink a lot and can pronounce words, that literally terms you an expert.
Expert for sure.
In my book, we'll just use this as my book.
Though. Okay.
I can't, dude. Honestly, my wife came in. Sean thought I drank it before he shot that video because it was open, obviously. And my wife came in and she took a drink and she's like, "Ooh, I really like that." And I looked at her and I go, "That's terrible news." She goes, "Why is that?" And I go, "I can't imagine we paid $350 for a bottle that you like and we like." Mm-hmm. There's no way. Like, yeah, my wife doesn't drink any whiskey at all. So
I, at that price point, do you guys drink other stuff besides bourbon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the guy that helped start Whistlepig, a guy named Raj Bhakta, started moving into the Armagnac cognac brandy space.
Okay.
And he tracked down and did a blend of barrels that the youngest barrel is 50 years old. The oldest barrel is 150 years old. It's from the 1800s.
Wow.
Blended it together and threw it into a peated whiskey barrel. And it tastes like peated whiskey. But at that age, it's not going to taste good anyways.
Right.
Yeah.
Oak. So it's really the peated whiskey barrel really kind of covers up how grossly oak and tannic this thing is.
That's wild.
But for a blend of, it's like seven barrels and a blend of 50 years old to 150 years old, it's $300. It is objectively a good piece of history, a good value. I'll pay $300 for that.
Yeah.
I am not, however, paying $150 for anything that Angel's Envy has to produce.
So
the other LEs that they've done, we've enjoyed a lot.
But now I completely agree that we've enjoyed them.
Yeah.
They would be really good at $100.
Oh, they'd be amazing at $100.
But they were one was $250.
Yeah.
Nope. One was $200.
Nope.
So wait, so here's the best part about the Mizanara. Nailed it.
You got it.
Steve, nailed it. You're not the expert. He's the expert. We're moving on. This is my book. So anyways, so the best part about that whiskey is the fact that it's blended 4-year-old and 9-year-old whiskey. Yeah. How in the hell are you putting 4-year-old whiskey? I don't care if that bottle cost $285, like the glass, the crystal. The fact that the whiskey in it is 4 and 9 years put together, don't have any issue with blending whiskey, right?
Nope.
The 4-year whiskey in any 4-year whiskey in a $370 bottle of whiskey is insane to me.
That's the problem with it. I'm not saying that Angels Envy doesn't produce good products. I've had a lot of great – I love their cash strength offering. But there's right. – are you guys familiar with Wade?
With what?
With a guy named Wade?
I don't think so.
Okay. So there's a very notorious character in bourbon, a guy named Wade Woodard, who kind of holds brands accountable. And he did an actual – and I'll send you a link to the spreadsheet, but he did a spreadsheet that breaks down value – what's the word I'm looking for?
Value per dollar or like the whiskey per dollar, like as a taste is what you're pouring or paying for it.
Yeah. Okay. So basically price per ounce for a standard offering and then the cash strength version. Right. So like if you go, Elijah Craig, $30, great bottle, great price point, 90 proof. If you go from the $30 expression to the cash strength, barrel strength version of Elijah Craig, it's $60. Mm-hmm. You go Angels Envy, so it's about double the price. But Angels Envy, their standard offering is $45.
Yeah.
Their cash strength offering is now 100. Four times their standard offering. That's where I have a problem with Angels Envy. So if they released the cash strength at $90, I'd buy it all day.
Oh, for sure. I completely
all
agree.
Day.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be in all 50 states this year.
I like that whiskey a lot. The Angels cask, the barrel strength cask, I like a lot. It's
still one of our favorite finished whiskeys.
It's a good product.
It is. Like you said.
Unfortunately, it's $200.
Here's what I'd be interested to know. Your thoughts on, and I'm sorry if I derailed the bottle of whiskey that we were talking about, but
no, it's
the $80 to $120 price range is full of garbage.
Yeah. Specifically, we find more or less the $80 to $100.
Yeah.
Like right in that price point, like you're just ruining your value. You're not getting anything really worth that price point. Yeah. There's better bottles cheaper. And if you spend a little bit more, you can get a better bottle. So
the diminishing return seems so high right there.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of thoughts on that. And you didn't completely derail the subject. Part of the reason why I wanted to send you guys that sample is to talk about valuation. So you're absolutely right. Most people, there's a ton of companies out there sourcing anything from 6-year-old to 10-year-old. I mean, Sam Houston, we did the first blend with them. So the very first edition of Sam Houston that you guys have tasted on the show.
Yeah.
We blended that. That was us.
Oh, really?
The Houston Bourbon Society. So they sent us samples. Cool. It's 12-year-old 1792 basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was originally supposed to be 100 proof and we were really pushing to get them to do it at cash strength. And of course it released at 90 proof.
Yeah.
It tastes like really old 1792, a 12-year-old 1792. It's very oak forward. It's okay. But at $90, it's a bit of a tough sell, even at 12 years old. The very first episode I chimed in on you guys on, and I see it on your top shelf behind you, Owen Powell's bottles. They're 8-year-old or something like that, somewhere in that range. But it's like it was like $70-$80 or something, the first bottle. It's okay. I just I think it would be great at $60.
Are you referencing the Fern Creek bottles?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those were sent to us. We have a buddy in Kentucky who just sends us stuff that he knows we can't find up here, right? Yeah. That's how we got the Sam Houstons initially. So real quick, because I don't want to forget, that Sam Houston 12, though, hear me out. Okay. If you've had 1792 age 12 year, I think that Sam Houston crushes the 1792 age 12 year. And I know the age 12 year was around $60-$70, I think.
Like 7 bottles.
But nobody could find it. And it went for way more in different places on the market. Obviously, stores were marking it up, stuff like that. But that Fern Creek stuff is super interesting because first off, I love like the vintage old school label. I think that looks so stinking cool. I don't know. It's so, that being $80 for me starts to hit, like if this is a craft distillery, I'll pay a little more to support them if I like it. Right.
Sure.
If
Welcome
I'm
in Texas whiskey.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Now if I can buy an Old Forester 1920, or you're putting that out and you're not a craft distillery, I got to go Old Forester 1920 for $60.
Yep.
I have to.
Yeah. 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 So, I don't disagree at all. And that's the unfortunate state of bourbon right now is I liked Owen. I liked Fern Creek. It didn't taste bad. It was got a little bit of a youthful bite, a little bit heavy on the ethanol, but it's a solid bottle, but it'd be solid at 60.
Yeah, it's, I agree.
At 90, I'm having a hard 80. I forget the exact price point.
I think it's 80, so yeah. 80 and change.
Yeah, it's too much.
Foot the bill on the startup when you're a craft. Yeah. So
there's a lot of crafts. Like
yeah, that's what Dan said. You know, you pay a little bit more to support a brand that you enjoy their product, I guess, just to help them out. Hopefully down the way, either the product gets better or cheaper.
Yeah.
That's your hope.
Yeah. And that brings me to the sample in front of you. So that's a private, we're going to be bottling under a new label called Prideful Goat. 15. So Doc Swinson's is 15-year-old Heaven Hill juice for $130 plus tax. So $145 for 15-year-old Heaven Hill is the, as far as I know, is the cheapest independent bottler of Heaven Hill liquid at 15 years old. I can't think of another one below $125, $130 plus tax. That is going to be $90.
Okay.
So for 15-year-old, 15-year-old cast strength Heaven Hill for $90. Yeah.
Wait. So you mentioned earlier that you have a label to bottle under, right?
Yes.
Is that what you're referencing right now?
Yeah. So I don't own what you're tasting.
Okay.
It hasn't been announced yet, but
okay.
How do I? Yeah, let me be careful here. Mm-hmm. So
lawyers,
I don't own this brand, but we're going to be doing a lot of bottling with this brand under this label.
Okay.
There's a guy locally in Dallas, a guy named Randall Sullivan. Him and I invited a bunch of people from our clubs to go taste some and blend some 15-year-old Heaven Hill juice. That is the first release that's supposed to be released soon. I designed the label, the logo, the name, all of that was me. And it will be released this fall, hopefully before Christmas, for under $100.
Oh, that's amazing, dude.
Yeah. So just getting into this, we were sitting here talking and I was like, what could this be? And now that I smell it, I would never guess this is Heaven Hill. Like, yeah. Not once.
Yeah.
To expand on that, there's Sean and I get often, and some of the ECBPs are where we kind of venture off where we don't get it as much.
Yep.
Sean and I often on a lot of Heaven Hill products get like a funkiness that comes out of Heaven Hill through a lot of their product lines. Right.
I'm telling you, it's the wood they use.
And so in whether like EC18, we get that funk, like some of like the cheaper products, we get that funk from them, but it's something that kind of like lives through their line. When I first drank that, I thought to myself, and you texted us and told us, you know, what you just told us right now. And I drank it. I'm like, dude, what I get from this is like a wildly off profile ECBP.
And then
because it's not that weird funk.
Yeah.
You don't get all the nuttiness that some of the Heaven Hill products have.
Yeah.
It's very sweet.
But okay. I was going to say it's closer in my mind to some of the, Eagle Rare stuff, that meaty note that I get out of it.
Talking like the store pick, the weird store pick.
There's like a little funk that you'll get in Eagle Rare, and it's super prevalent on the Eagle Rare 17, that it's like, it's meat. It literally smells like steak.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I love it. It's fantastic when I get that.
We get it on Eagle Rare 17 as we've also said before is like fried, like when you cook bacon, and that aroma that you get of the grease and like the fat cooking from bacon is so good, right? Yeah. And a lot of times there's like a lot of really high-end whiskeys that we get that note on. Was King Kentucky one of them? There were some really high-end bottles we got that note on.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
What it references is richness, like a fullness of flavor.
Yeah, there's like an oiliness about the nose that you know it's going to coat really well. And it does.
The fact that this is under $100 with the white, we'll call it the tech specs that you just put out, is insane to me.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people don't realize what goes into pricing bottles. That Mizunara oak glass decanter, let's just say, I'll give you a great example. I believe, and I could be wrong unless it's gotten cheaper for them, but Peerless is top.
Yeah.
So Peerless is heavy, 4-ounce, solid steel death ball of a top. is $8 to $10 their cost.
Whew.
So what that translates is at when it goes to the distributor, they're gonna add their markup on top, let's just say 30%.
Right.
So now that $8 to $10 top is now $12, give or take. Then they add on 30% to go to the liquor store.
Yep.
So now it's a $15 top as part of the final price.
Yeah.
And then when the liquor store sells it, they add on 30%. So you're talking yeah. about a two-year-old rye and $20 of the bottle price
yeah.
is just the metal topper.
Sure.
So I'm all for us putting some effort in some label design and making sure
yeah.
the label, like, you know who does a really good label? And that's Bell Mead's Cash Strength. That soft paper with gold foil. Yep. Like, they put a lot of effort in their actual label design. A lot of money in that label.
Sure.
Not in a box. It's not wax right. dipped. It's not.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
So the cost for Cash Strength 10-year-old MGP from Bell Mead is $60.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Which is wild
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, that it's that price.
It's fantastic. And
yeah.
And look, I love Pinhook, but the last Pinhook barrel we did was 4 years old, 4-year-old rye from MGP for $65.
A bottle.
It's a tough sell.
Per bottle. It's a tough sell.
Man.
So this independently bottled new label that's coming out, you guys are the second civilians to drink it. The first pair to drink it was Brian Callen and Brendan Schaub when they were.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. They probably hate
that's
it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, dude, thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. We really do appreciate that.
So when it does come out, are we talking it's launching in like certain states? Like what kind of market?
Distribution wise.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a great question. So the first run will be about 1,000 bottles, full statewide distribution. The whole thing's going to spec. So it's not okay. getting, it's okay. not seeing outside of Texas just yet.
Okay.
But we got to take care of the clubs first, right?
Right.
Yeah,
of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. So our club is 10,000 members. There's a few Dallas clubs, sister groups that drove down here to help us pick. Everyone's sure. going to want their fill first.
Yep.
Yeah.
But we've kind of evolved past barrel picks. Barrel picks are 150 or 150 bottles, give or take.
Yeah.
The, mm-hmm. the groups are so big now, it's hard to keep up with demand. So enter a private blend, 15-year-old Heaven Hill Cash Strength release.
And that's then we insane can, to me.
That dude. That's incredible.
My whiskey club is so big, we got a label is what I just dude, heard.
That's the greatest. That is might be one of my favorite statements of all time.
Well, it's hard to keep up. People get so yeah. angry. You just mentioned the problem with the I'll give you a great example. So back in February, 2 years ago, we did trying to solve this problem. We did a 7-barrel release or 7 project because one of them was not whiskey.
Okay.
Based off the movie Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So you remember Mr. Pink, Mr. Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So our group has gotten so big, one barrel just isn't enough. So what we did is we did a 7-barrel series. Mr. Brown was Elijah Craig. We did a beer release, 1,600 beers. It was a barrel-aged coconut stout.
Oh, my God.
Called Nice Guy Eddie.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
I was going to say, we just had a – wasn't that a coconut stout that
we just tasted
had?
A coconut stout to yeah. help barrel age something.
Yeah. yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah,
so we partnered with a brewery. We gave them our empty barrels. They put beer in it. Then we did our own beer release. So the last one for the release was a Four Roses release titled Mr. Pink.
Okay.
And when we put it on sale, we did it online only. And the entire barrel sold out in 30 seconds.
Treat yourself, Pete, dude.
And the vast majority of people who put it in their cart, by the time they put in their credit card information,
yeah,
it had been sold out.
Right.
So
gotta have that auto save, man.
Yeah.
Know your security code. Saves you time.
So the outrage and the fury over that was just too much. So we're like, okay, well, how do we fix that? So we're doing a Foursquare rum release for the state of 1,000 bottles. We're doing
that's super cool.
Yeah.
Foursquare makes good shit.
Yeah.
We're doing an Armagnac release of 600 bottles. So we're trying to scale up a little bit and trying to keep the, cause I mean, you know what it's like. The bourbon community is rabid right now. It's hard
yeah.
to keep everybody happy.
What a great idea. We got to talk after this podcast.
And that's what I was just going to
say. We got to have a conversation.
Low key here. Yeah.
I love that idea though. I think that you, like, obviously, that's a problem, right? So this is one of the things that we're working on with Patreon is barrel picks. And then our patrons being able to buy the barrel picks that we do, right? Yeah. Our Patreon realistically has outgrown, like you just said, has outgrown anything that we can do pick-wise.
Yeah, well, we started this idea and we could satisfy Patreon
at the time.
At the time, and then now it's kind of grown, and we're like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are like clearing like 7,000 a month on Patreon. You guys are killing it right now.
I wish.
Give or take. Yes. Give or take. Yeah.
Give or take.
Give or take. Depends on the month. But no, but it's a great thing that's been growing, and it's something that we appreciate a lot. So one of the things that we spend time on when it comes to channel stuff is trying to make sure. We run polls in Patreon to see what we can do to try to make it worth whatever anybody's spending there, right? Mm-hmm. If you're spending $2 a month to be there, are you getting the content that you were hoping you would get while you were here or $2 a month, right? Yeah. Now the people who are spending more, like,
do you feel satisfied at what you're getting for, you know, what we're offering?
So we're trying to do barrel picks, but we do live in Michigan, and Michigan happens to be a hyper restrictive state.
And COVID.
Yeah. And yeah,
it's been rough.
And the Rona. But anyways, how it's working is the problem, Sean and I are pretty picky, which is probably our actual
issue. We have passed on stuff that we could have done by now
barrel pick
and
wise,
fulfilled. Yeah. And it was like, I don't want to give people a shitty product.
If we're not going to drink we can't do it.
I'm not standing by what I'm selling. It's just, it's not a good look.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you guys could totally do it too. And I think at the very least, you guys are perfectly primed, just like the Crowded Barrel guys to do something yourself, you know?
Yep.
They've got a crazy operation.
They have a really cool situation. They're very, very smart. They've done a really good job. Like I said, with marketing, honestly, we have a couple Eleanor bottles in here. If I go back, I'm a part of their Patreon, so I can buy their releases. They do like the Texas blends. Mm-hmm. And then they do obviously their Eleanors. We bought a rye and stuff from them, but it's one of those things where it's like, they're putting out stuff and they're making a lot of content off putting that stuff out, which is perfect because it's consuming itself.
Yeah.
So their product creates content and they need content for their YouTube channel, which helps sell their product. It's such a good idea, but I'm telling you, this situation that's on the table in front of us
on point,
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I'm what's excited to come, man, I think you're set, dude. That's fantastic.
Well, this is the only, like, the one thing we didn't want to do with bottling stuff is I don't want to touch Kentucky bourbon unless it's completely different than the 99,000 other brands out there.
Sure.
So we're not touching 8 to 10 year old. We're not touching 12 year old bourbon, but 15 year old Heaven Hill at cash strength.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's not to love about that. So,
I tell you,
unfortunately, this kind of disproves one of our theories.
What's that?
That Heaven Hill can't
age. No, we said 15 was the prime.
Okay.
We said Elijah Craig 18 is hot trash because it's too old.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's proof down. I don't know, but it's too old.
Well, no, it's proof down to help cover up, to help water down the tank. Trash. It's so wood. It's so woody. Yeah.
I've never had a outside of Dickel's nonsense.
Redneck 25 is less woody than Elijah Craig 18.
It's, you know what? It's better. Yeah. Redneck 25 is better and it's a lot older. Oh, I got a question for you. If we can ask you questions now.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Oh, hell yeah. All right.
I guess, hold on. This gets wild. I don't know what's going on over here right now.
Like Dan's brain just light bulbs.
All right. Yep.
All right. Have you had Sweetens Cove?
Yeah, it's called Dickel Ball and Bond.
Okay. The fact that you sighed, anybody listening needs to see the visual of you sighing before you responded.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
That is one of the most. Now, I know a lot of whiskey. I know whiskey's big, and I know celebrity whiskey obviously carries a name with it.
It's very subjective, too, Dan.
Sure.
So it's heinous.
It's what?
It's heinous. Yeah, so it's heinous. It's heinous for a few reasons. So, listen, I like Marianne Barnes. She's a good person.
Sure.
But, look, I'm trying real hard to be nice. They sell 13-year-old Bottled and Bond,
yeah,
blended Dickel for $35.
Yeah,
on the high end.
Right.
I understand you have to pay a celebrity. I understand that.
Right.
But the differentiation from $35 to, was it 300?
200 and retail's 200, but obviously markup and whatnot. So
yeah, that's absolutely offensive,
dude.
And the big problem with celebrity brands is you can launch a brand off celebrity. Sure, they'll sell the first 10,000 bottles.
Go ahead. For sure.
But there'll be no sustainability and you will not receive a second check. You will not, there's no longevity. And going back to Sean's point earlier, you don't want to put out anything crap because once you burn your audience, That's it. Mm-hmm. Right. They might buy one bottle of Sweetens Cove.
Yeah.
And then they'll either get divorced or commit suicide because of garbage.
The best part about the Sweetens Cove thing is, in my mind, what you do is you come out with a hitter, right? Yeah. Sweetens Cove batch one, monster whiskey, not Dickel.
Then you switch to Schmickle.
And then if you want to trick people and you still don't want the longevity, but you got your paycheck and you don't care about your community at all, then you switch to Schmickle.
Yeah.
And you make sour, rotten whiskey, realistically.
You know what that's called? That's called the Kentucky Owl business model. Oh my God. Because the Kentucky Owl rye batch one was delicious.
Yeah.
And then they jacked it up $50 and reduced the age by 2 years.
Yeah.
And it was a completely different product. It was garbage.
Dude, the fact that – so it makes me feel sad in my heart that Stoli's running that name into the ground because – and I don't know Dixon. He seems like a great dude, personally. Yeah. I I've never met him, so I'm saying this as a person who hasn't met him or even chatted with him a whole lot. But he seems like a great dude, and he seems like when that brand initially started, it seemed like such a heartfelt thing, right? I've heard that, and I haven't had him, but I've heard the Kentucky Owl batch bourbons, like 1 through 4, were absolutely amazing.
Monsters.
Was 8 or 9 the newest release?
9.
We had 9. And it was good whiskey.
Yeah, but we couldn't justify the
neither of us thought it was worth $300. We had Kentucky Owl Batch 1, 2, and 3 rye. Mm-hmm. I personally like the rye way more than I like the bourbons.
Of course.
Personally.
Yeah.
And those are cheaper than the bourbons, which is crazy because rye is a more expensive grain, which seems insane to me. But I think that I feel so sad that Stoli took it and then thought, let's just continuously raise the price. Yeah. Until we can build a theme park with Kentucky Owl all over it.
Yeah, so. And it was already supposed to be open, and it hasn't. It's been delayed. You know why? Because distributors and stores all over the U.S. are sitting on $300 bottles
100%
of Kentucky Owl.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. We know a store that's got a couple of them.
So how interesting is it, in my mind, and I don't know a lot. I know the amount about marketing in which my wife has told me because that's what she does, and then I know what I've learned from doing YouTube anything, right? That's it. So – when it comes to marketing, let's call it like I'm not that great at it, but I've tried. So the idea that you've made $300 bottles of bourbon and $200 bottles of rye, and like you just said, a lot of those whiskeys are sitting on shelves places only due to price. The whiskey inside of them isn't bad.
Yep.
It's a price issue. So what you decide to do is release a $1,000 bottle of whiskey.
Very limited, though.
That's insane to me. We're not selling $200 and $300 bottles. Let's release $1,000 bottle.
Got a cool box. That packaging, by the way, is a good $40 of that price. But what about the rest? The liquid could not have cost anywhere near that.
No. And we have a friend that sent us samples of one.
Yeah.
And
it's good.
It's fantastic whiskey.
Unfortunately, they added a comma in there. Yeah.
it's such good whiskey. And now, would it even, and I don't know, we haven't blinded it. We've never blinded it. We've only drank it knowing what it was.
Yeah.
It wouldn't probably place top 3 of 2020 for us.
I don't think so.
Even so far. We haven't even had BTAC yet. So.
Yeah. Like we're going to get some.
I like we'll taste your head probably. Yeah. Optimism.
Yeah.
So I like this. I like, you got any more questions? Anything else you want me to bash?
Well, it's interesting because the Sweetens Cove thing seems to be, there are people who believe that it's a collector's item, right? Yeah.
And by definition, I think it might be.
Right. With Peyton's name on it, too, attached to it, it being a limited release.
It's very limited.
Right. It's an interesting thing.
Unfortunately, like, I think it was in the behind the scenes or something like that. I was like, do you think Peyton just, like, tasted it and spit it out and was like, what the fuck is this? I don't know what to do with this.
Have you guys seen the bottle in person? It's got kind of this wide, kind of this, you know, it kind of looks like his forehead. It's like, it's all a lot of empty space, you know, just kind of.
That's fair. We didn't take that into consideration in the review.
It's a pretty bottle.
Somebody sent it to us and was like, somebody messaged me and was like, do you guys want to try this? And I'm like, Sean will hate this for sure. Send it. We'll send it back.
Oh yeah.
And so he sent it and
it was worse than my expectations. Yeah. So much worse. I went in clean conscious, like, all right, I'm not going to have any pre-deposition about this bottle. Got it. Nailed it. And it was still deposition
is what you do in court. A predisposition
is what you're looking for.
There you go.
I'm an expert.
You know what I wanted to say. Like throw letters
we
at it.
We made it eventually. Yeah. Sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah. And I was so let down by it already. Like, I don't know. It's just,
are you a Dickel fan?
Nah, God, no.
Neither of us like Dickel.
I literally just got sent a sample blind, smelled it, went, that's Dickel. I'm not drinking that.
So let me pitch you on something.
Uh-oh.
Have you had Dickel 17 year?
No.
And you guys love tobacco. You guys are cigar heads like myself. I love a good cigar. Now, it's been a while since I've revisited. It's funny, like in this bourbon journey, you'll have something that you like early on and you come back years later and you're like, oh, yeah, this is garbage. Absolutely. Why did I like that? But so it's been about 2 years since I've had it. But in my head, I distinctly remember falling in love with Dickel 17 year. Mm. So I don't know if they still release
Everyone
it.
Everyone has a right to be wrong.
Have you had it?
No. We have it. I don't think I've even seen it, honestly. No.
So older Dickel is heavy on the tobacco notes. And I'm a fan of older Dickel. I'm not a fan of younger Dickel.
That's interesting.
And, even 12 years is just
stop giggling.
Not right. Old Dickels.
So what's your favorite like current line of whiskey, right? Like Mash Bill 2 or like Old Forester Whiskey Row or something like that. I know you drink a lot of Dusties because I've watched videos of the podcast.
Yeah.
And I know you've got like Dusties galore.
He brought out birth year bottles for Anthony Starr.
Yeah, I try to do that for every
awesome.
I sat down with Coleman Domingo from Fear the Walking Dead and we drank I think he was born in 79 or something. We drank Old Turkey. And so for the show, the two things I spend money on is definitely not the wardrobe. It's the travel equipment and if we're sitting down with a guest, I try to get a bottle that'll mean something to them.
Sure.
Yeah. So a lot of birth year bottles. We were supposed to sit down with DL Hughley, and I spent all this money on a birth year bottle, and then he canceled. So, because a lot of times, Anthony Starr, like he's not a huge whiskey guy. So, the only way I know to make it mean something is if it means something to them. So, if I just brought them Pappy or BTAC, they may not realize what they're drinking.
Yeah, significance.
So if I get it their birth year bottle then it means something more to them.
Right.
We have a better conversation, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that if you bring Pappy or BTAC, honestly, it's less relevant for them because they can probably just afford that if they wanted, right? Like that stuff does sit as a trophy in a store in a big city at way overpriced.
Yeah.
So if they wanted, they can walk in and say, yeah, I'll pay $2,300 for whatever it is.
Sure.
But if you bring them something that basically is unobtainable outside of like being into whiskey, that's a
You're not going to walk into a store and be like, oh, wow, that's my birth year bottle.
1973 turkey. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a really good idea.
So how are you – what were you asking around that? You said that
what's your favorite line of whiskey right now from anyone that's currently made, like that's still made, not that's a Dusty, not something like that?
So I think the most impressive – and the brand that can do no wrong, Brown-Forman's killing it on all fronts.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Brown-Forman has not made a bad decision in 5 years.
Yeah.
Beam had the disaster of canceling Old Granddad, then bringing it back and deciding not to cancel it, and then raising the price from Booker's from $50 to $100, then backtracking it back down to 75. Yeah. Every brand, and let's not even go down the Wild Turkey path. There's been some frustrating developments there for a lot of consumers. But Brown-Forman can do no wrong. Early Times Bottled and Bond, although it was created for bars, it is a solid 1 liter, $20. And here in Texas, it's $20. Like it's a couple bucks cheaper. I think you guys said it was $23 at one point.
Yeah.
It was created for the bars. It wasn't meant for us, but it found a home with us as well, which is that's an even bigger win for them because not only are they getting the case movement from bars, they also get consumers buying. Jack Daniels, the barrel proof releases. I know the Jack Daniel barrel proof rye picks are coming. There's Brown. And of course, we had Campbell Brown on from Old Forester.
Sure.
You cannot go wrong from their $20 rye, which is ridiculously good at barrel proof, to of course, 1920, 1910. Brown Forman's
they're gods right now. And yeah. they haven't spent any money on a celebrity endorsement, and I'm sure that's coming eventually.
Right.
So
they spent some money with Statesman, but it was a while back.
Yeah.
That was a tough call. I take that back. They didn't make before I said they can do no wrong.
Sure. You reminded me. They did.
The Statesman film was a bit of a farce for sure,
but
they dropped the rye and made up for it like it never happened.
Well, here's the thing with Statesman. I don't actually have a problem with Statesman.
Yeah.
Because it helped them expand their current brand, and then they continued the Whiskey Row.
Yep.
The story that I heard about Statesman was that the idea that they partnered with the film and blah 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 blah. The fact that they did that got them into casinos and bars that they couldn't get into before because it was attached to a movie that was doing well at the time, right?
Yeah. Sure.
So
should have done. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good.
They should have done Statesman first, 1920. 1910.
Okay. That's fair. Yep.
But Statesman came out after 1920, and 1920 was a banger. A banger.
Yep. That's fair.
But it was, I mean, Glendronic, they did a Statesman Glendronic Scotch release too, and that was fantastic.
Sure. Oh, well, I think it's funny because obviously we are huge, like Brown Forman, if we have one distillery that we like the product and the business side that they're pulling off.
We get told so much that we're probably paid for by Brown Forman.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not true.
Unfortunately, they won't respond. But the Brown Forman stuff, realistically, they're like the king. A lot of the things you just referenced were a lot of their available, easy to find.
Yeah, you walk in anywhere, they're just there.
They're also absolutely murdering the limited edition game.
At least
between King of Kentucky and President's Choice, those two bottles. As special whiskeys.
Yeah.
President's Choice is 175, but they release literally like 300 to 400 bottles at a time.
Yep.
King Kentucky being middle 200 range or price range is one of the best whiskeys I think they annually make at this point.
Yeah.
Being around 15-year-old, all single barrel, all barrel proof, and all like incredibly well-aged whiskey. Brown Forman, Jackie Zykin, Campbell, the people that are at Brown Forman right now, will be written about in whiskey history, 100%.
Jackie Zykin will go down. It's a matter of time as an icon of whiskey.
I believe so.
She is principally and specifically responsible for a lot of their pricing.
Yeah, I was going to say that in the rye. She fought for it to be in the $20 price point.
Yeah. You know what else she fought for? She fought, despite the fact that consumers were asking for it already, but she fought for barrel strength. Old Forrester picks.
Yeah.
Jackie Zykin is, she should be a bigger household name in bourbon. And I think she's still very well respected, but I think people should be talking about her the way they talk about Jim Rutledge or the way they talk about Brent Elliott. I mean, like, or Al Young, who, by the way, was just an ambassador. Like, he, right. I mean, hold on. Before, I'm not,
pull back.
He wasn't just an ambassador.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a great conversation with him. We did a great episode. And, but his role, she arguably is more involved with the development of products. And I think
She's steering the ship.
Yes. 100%.
She's murdering it. Like, I completely agree. I think Jackie Zykin will go down as a legend. And the funny thing is, I think Jackie Zykin's one of the reasons that I say, I think whiskey's turning less serious.
Yeah.
She has a personality.
Yeah.
Jackie Zykin isn't, and I'm not saying anything bad about him, but Jackie Zykin isn't Harlan Wheatley, right? Harlan Wheatley comes across like an engineer or like a very technical,
calculated,
very literate person. Jackie Zykin is very good at her job and comes across like she'd be a blast to hang out
with. Yeah. If she was the bartender serving you a drink, you would think, awesome. Yeah. That she just talked and having a good time.
She's got a hell of a lot going on in the whiskey world with the personality and with her palate and with her ability to, obviously they respect her. The Old Forester rye being $20 or $25 is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And that's because of her. That's crazy. I think she's amazing, but
yeah, I need to reach out to her. She hasn't been on, she should be on, we should be talking about her more. But listen, the show is normally about an hour. We're about an hour and a half in.
Okay.
We're good at that. Sorry.
It's okay. I could keep talking to you guys all night. I do want to ask, what's next for you guys? What's on the plate? When can our listeners check you guys out so they can unsubscribe to me and subscribe to you?
No.
No one unsubscribed from anything.
This is the best part, is there's just room for everyone, yeah. Which is why the platform's so cool. That's literally the best part.
Rising tide shit.
Yeah.
It's all about everyone coming up. Like, yeah. No one's unsubscribing from one channel to go watch another.
There's no reason to.
And, I mean, we're here to have fun with whiskey and hang out with people. Yeah. And we can do that across different platforms and, different videos and personalities.
Yeah. I didn't know that because I thought I was, I went ahead and unsubscribed from Bourbon Pursuit because I thought there was like a maximum amount I could subscribe to.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, you can find us on YouTube, Bourbon Junkies, Instagram's Bourbon Junkies, Patreon's Bourbon Junkies.
Yep. We got videos every Monday and Thursday.
Yep.
11:30, can't go wrong. Tuesday nights, we do a live stream. It's just pretty much more of this, same format.
Yep.
Drinking some whiskey, hanging out with the community, having a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty straightforward right now. We're trying to make things happen. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, like you said earlier, the pandemic shut our building down this year. Hopefully early next year, we'll be able to build a building.
Yeah.
So needless to say, we got more content coming. Eventually we're talking about eventually doing a podcast as well.
Yep.
And when we do, if you want to come hang out, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Well,
very good for us.
I've got about four months before my schedule completely frees up and I'll be traveling all over. So
perfect. Well, when you come to Michigan, let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds great.
This cool distillery that we know that you should work with.
There's a very cool distillery in Michigan that is awesome to work with. So, yeah.
Well, cool. I appreciate it, guys. And I'll see you guys on your own channel soon in the comments section.
Sounds good. Thanks, man. You. Appreciate it.
Cheers, guys. Enjoy the bottle.
Oh, cheers. We will.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.